Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Rabbi Jared Sachs from the Temple of Israel in Minneapolis.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Got to make a little younger every year, huh? Or am I getting older?
Got to start somewhere.
Okay.
In the annual cycle of Torah readings, the weekly readings from the five books of Moses, the Jewish communities are reading this week about, or being reminded rather this week about, the relationship we have with the land, that it is not we who own the land or the property that we have, but it's actually God who owns it, and that the way that we treat one another and the way we treat the earth reflects the relationship we have with the Creator. And so may the door of our state be wide enough to receive all who hunger for love, all who are lonely for friendship. May we welcome all who have cares to unburden, thanks to express, hopes to nurture. May the door of our state be narrow enough to shut out pettiness and pride, envy and enmity. May its threshold be no stumbling block to young or straying feet. May it be too high to admit complacency, selfishness, and harshness. May our state be, for all who enter, the doorway to a richer and more meaningful life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it's 60th anniversary. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parasol, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. Have an executive and official communications printed on today's agenda. Next, we'll go to messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of 5 members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file 3056, a bill for inoculating the natural resources, modifying permanent school fund provisions. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Representatives Hansen, Clark, Mariani, Dietrich, and Osment. Senate file 3056 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2390 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 2390, a bill for inoculating the consumer protection, modifying restrictions on the collection and use of Social Security numbers. Senate File 2390 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 3082, a bill for an act relating to retirement, various retirement plans. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed thereon. Representatives Murphy M., Kahn, Thiessen, Nelson, and Smith have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 3082 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 3082 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Betzold motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business is reports of committees.
They are
printed on today's agenda. Senator,
Mr. President, Mr. President, I move that reports, the committee reports printed in the agenda, be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There are two printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is Senate bill introductions. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Have any work there? Senator Pogermiller, do you?
Mr. President, on motions, I'd like to call for a brief recess for purposes of appointing a conference committee.
Okay, on the motion for a brief recess, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess. Senator, come to order. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
Yes, there's a report at the desk. Secretary.
Senator Pogermiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File 3082, Senators Betzold, Larson, Olson M., Lynch, and Wergen. Senator Pogermiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, under motions and resolutions, why don't we take up a couple conference committee reports? I think there's a Senate file 2605.
That's correct. That's a Senator Saltzman bill. Senator Saltzman.
And thank you, Mr. President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate file 2605 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay. Senator. A brief description of the bill and what changes were made in the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate provision, we did prevail on the staggered terms for the Metropolitan Council. We made one small change in that we reinstated the language that the governor that a member serves at the pleasure of the governor, and we removed the language, a member may only be removed for cause. We worked extensively with the Metropolitan Council and the Governor's Office to try to find language to define cause. And in the end, we felt that what our intent here is really to change to a staggered term in the Metropolitan Council. And we believe that this is a very reasonable change, a modest change, but really begins to try to make the Met Council less of a partisan council. Certainly the governor still has the ability to remove members at his discretion. But I ask for your support of this bill. I also want to thank Senators Bonhoff and Gerloff for their support and work on the conference committee.
Further discussion, Senator Saltzman renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations of the conference committee report on Senate File 2605 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2605, a bill for an act relating to the Metropolitan Council, providing for staggered terms of Metropolitan Council members, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 54 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Pogerbeller.
Mr. President, under Rule 26, I'd like to special order number 41 on general orders. I yield to Senator Carlson, House File 995.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. President and members, I move House File 995, which is a resolution for the Minnesota Legislature to ask the governor to take a look at the notion of peak oil. Members, peak oil is a situation that maybe we don't all agree on, but I feel it is coming, and it is a very serious situation, and it's going to cause a major inflation of our gasoline and oil prices, all petroleum products. And I think we may be all already seeing it with a doubling of our gasoline prices in the last couple of years only. Peak oil is the notion that we cannot find and commercialize the resources that are in the ground fast enough to keep up with the international demand. The international demand is coming from all countries. For instance, one of the things you need to think about is China and India alone are adding 3,000 automobiles to the road every year, every day. And the finding of more reserves is slowing. And the amount of oil that can be pulled out of those reserves is also slowing. So what this resolution does, and members can read it in its entirety, it's a fairly long resolution, but it does look at the parts of peak oil, and it asks the governor to look at how peak oil can be accommodated in Minnesota. So members, I ask for your support.
Mr. President.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to ask Senator Carlson a question if he would respond.
He'll respond, Senator
Thank you,
Hamm.
Mr. President. Senator Carlson, back in 1970, in the 70s, when we had a period of time when oil prices, gasoline prices rose, and there was great concern about oil production and the continuation of natural resources, there were a lot of predictions made about the future of oil reserves and the future of petroleum resources. Can you tell us what those predictions were back in the previous period of uncertainty with oil production? What were the predictions being made about the future for oil in 1970?
Mr. President, Senator Hahn, there were a lot of predictions. There were predictions that, in fact, that oil is going to last forever. And there's a potential that could be true if we didn't increase our demand. But our increase in demand has just, it's skyrocketed since then. And back in those days, if you remember, oil was about something around $6, $5, $6 a barrel. We've now gone over $120 a barrel. And also at that time, if you remember, there was the formation of OPEC. OPEC is a cartel, and OPEC does realize that peak oil is coming. And of course, what they don't want to do is pump all of their oil out of the ground. So they are artificially holding back oil because they want to maintain a business for many years to come.
Well, Mr. President, Sarah Carlson, thank you. My recollection and my reading of the history on this is that most of the talk in the 70s was about we were running out of oil. In fact, that there were predictions that we would run out of oil before the turn of the century. That was the prediction, that we were going to have this peak oil situation, as you call it, occur before the turn of the century. There's lots of stories about how we were going to run out of oil, and in fact, what has happened is that oil reserves have continued to grow. And I think that this is a myth. I think that this is a myth, and that if you look at the history of natural resources, things like oil, we are not running out of oil. We are not, what we're seeing in terms of pricing is a response to the uncertainties in the marketplace. A lot of those uncertainties are, in fact, created by political considerations. In this country, for example, we have taken the position that we are not going to drill for the oil that we know is there in Anwar and off the coast of the Gulf and the West Coast. We just refused to tap those resources. We've refused to build refineries in this country for 30 years or so. So the pricing that we're experiencing is not related to the fact that there isn't oil available. It's our unwillingness to use it, our unwillingness to explore for it, our unwillingness to try to take advantage of the resources that we have. We are not running out of oil. The fact that there is a cartel that attempts to control prices, we saw in the 70s that didn't work. And part of the reason it doesn't work is there are a lot of countries that don't belong to the cartel that are producing oil. Canada is our biggest oil producer. They're not a part of that cartel. And so one group of producers cannot control a global price of a commodity unless there's collusion on the part of governments. So members, I know resolutions don't have a lot of an effect, but I don't think we ought to take the position in this body of buying into this idea that somehow we need to accept as a fact what is a myth, that there is going to be a point where we run out of natural resources. Natural resources change over time, and their use of them changes over time. 200 years ago, no one would have predicted that petroleum would have any value whatsoever. But what we need to do is take a realistic position on this, use the resources that we have, do not put impediments in the way of using them, and I think passing things like this resolution only send the message to the public that we believe that economics and the economic pursuit of resources cannot solve the pricing problem that we're facing. So, members, I'd urge a no vote.
Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. President and Senator Hahn, a couple of things about what you just said. You may be right. You may be right. Let's find out. And you were talking about myths. One of the myths that actually what you mentioned is this myth of not building oil refineries. That is a myth. Flint Hills Resources was first built in 1955 with about 35,000 barrels per day production capacity. It is now at 280,000 barrels per day production capacity, and they're adding 50,000 barrels per day production capacity. They don't want another oil refinery. What they want is to build theirs bigger. So in this case, they are increasing their capacity from the original capacity of it by 10 times. So this is a myth that we're not building more refineries. That is something that is promoted to confuse the public. They are manufacturing people. I'm a manufacturing person, and what you do is you look at the economies of scale. The economies of scale is you want a large refinery so that you can get a lot of production out of the same or roughly the same infrastructure. So they don't want to build more refineries. And another item that you mentioned is the tar sands in Canada. There's something called and I'm going to go a little bit technical on you here, something called the energy return versus energy invested, ROI, you could say it that way. And that is, back when oil was first found, you could scrape it up off the ground. You know, they did that on the tar sands in California. They did that in Pennsylvania. Soon, you had to pump it out. They did have the gushers. If you remember the movies, the gushers in Oklahoma, there are still gushers that are happening in the Far East, but those are going away. The oil wells that you see all throughout the South and Southwest, those are called stripper wells for the most part. They used to come up with 20,000 barrels a day. Now they're down to maybe 25 or 30 barrels per day. Those are the oil wells that are depleting. And that's what's happening around the world. These oil wells are depleting, and we can't drill them, and we can't commercialize them fast enough to be able to meet this huge demand that's happening in the world. So the world market is now being stressed, and all you need to do is look at the first gas station that you pass, and you can see what the result of that is. Now, that ratio that we talked about, when you go up to Canada, that's about one barrel of energy for three barrels out. And that is starting to hurt the production substantially. And in fact, the tar sands up in Canada have to be warmed with other energy. So they're using natural gas to heat the sands to drive out the oil. That oil is very thick, and it has to be diluted. And so we have a new pipeline that's going up to Canada, and that pipeline is a two-way pipeline, meaning that there is going to be a diluent, that's a dilutant, that's going up to Canada to dilute that oil so that it can come back down here in that pipeline. That diluent is naphtha, and it's going to be sent up there. It's going to dilute the oil, and then it can be pumped back down here. That's the kind of thing that causes oil to be more and more expensive, and we're at, again, 3 barrels out for 1 barrel in. In the 30s, we were 50 barrels out for 1 barrel in. In the 70s, we were 30 barrels out for 1 barrel in. Back when it was originally commercialized, nearly 100 years ago, it was 100 barrels out for 1 barrel in. And there are lots and lots of oil. We're not running out of oil, but it may as well be on the moon because you can't get it efficiently. Thank you.
And Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Senator Carlson, and I appreciate your point that you agree with me that we're not running out of oil. It is true that it is getting more expensive to get at it, but it certainly isn't helpful for governments to take the position that we can make economic decisions in a way that is smarter than the people that actually have their dollars invested in the business. And we should not be in the business as legislatures and governments putting impediments in the way of doing this. And in fact, we have. I'm quite sure that Flint Hills is not interested in having a competitor come in and build a refinery. But the fact is, across the country, we have not built refineries. We have put huge impediments in the way of developing the petroleum industry. We have put huge impediments in the way of exploring for both natural gas and petroleum. We have reserves. We have areas that we know there is oil, and it's not technologically impossible to get at it. It is just environmentally or politically impossible to get at it. And those are political things that we've decided. And so we've put costs into this production that have made the price of petroleum go higher than it would be if we did not put those impediments into place. And so there is no question that today petroleum products are the most efficient ways to fuel things like transportation vehicles, and we far more efficient in terms of energy output per cost than things like windmills or solar power or other technologies that still may need to be developed and may become competitive at some time. But rather than have those decisions be made by legislatures, they ought to be made in the marketplace. And all I'm saying, members, is that we should not get in the business of trying to dictate terms to a marketplace of how they ought to operate and at what prices they ought to work. So I would urge opposition to this. Let's not take the position that we know better than the marketplace what energy products are the best solutions for the future.
Discussion. Senator
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senator Hand, I don't know who you're trying to kid. Trying to blame the high cost of oil on the people in this body, on Minnesotans, on other legislatures around the world? No, the problem is that big oil is ripping us off, Senator Hand. Wake up and smell the coffee.
Mr. President.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Murphy. I think big government is ripping us off, not big oil. My goodness, there are. Do you not have any faith or understanding of a marketplace? I think this is preposterous. And I know we've done things in this body. I remember a couple of years ago when, Senator Murphy, you yourself had a bill that said, let's put a price control on gasoline. Remember that? Those are the kind of things that are disruptive to pricing. There is no question that governments have had huge impact on the future pricing that markets put on oil and on other commodities. We are not and should not be in the business of trying to dictate prices, dictate quantities, dictate which options are better. That's what marketplaces do, and they do it very efficiently, and they do it very well. There is not a conspiracy among big oil to control prices. People have this idea that there are some fat cat executives that get together in mahogany-paneled rooms and they set prices. That's a fiction that comes out of Hollywood movies. Marketplaces are very complex, involving millions of people around the world, and it's their actions and their judgments about what the future is going to be like that determine the prices of things like oil and other commodities. And when they see governments getting in the business of trying to control that, that makes uncertainty. That creates doubt in their ability for the market to really respond in a way that's consistent with the facts. And so that makes them a little nervous. That's what drives up prices. So I would just suggest read some economics, read about the oil industry from an economic point of view, and let's recognize that it's big government that is a bigger problem in our cost of oil and other energy than it is so-called big oil.
Okay. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Hand, you made a reference to the cap that we put on the price of gas in Minnesota. And do you know that Minnesota has some of the lowest gas prices in the nation? Bingo. Why do you think that is? Everybody's complaining about how high our gas tax is. So is it the tax? Or is it because we put a control on it that keeps it steady? So that there is distribution, so that there is competition in the state of Minnesota. And Senator Hand, you believe in competition. That bill keeps competition ripe in Minnesota. Yes, it does, Senator Hand. You can sit over there and shake your head all you want. Now, you're wrong on this idea that Senator Carlson has. You're wrong on the price cap of gasoline. I could go on. But, oh, Senator Michelle wants me to go on. So he even agrees with me.
Better day that we're going to vote on this.
Mr. President, and this got absolutely nothing to do with Senator Murphy. We have all of it. We have our discussions out in the hall.
That's a good place to have them, yeah.
But I do have a question, and I know that I don't feel bad about what Senator Carlson is doing. I disagree, but that's beside the point. But a question that I would like to ask is how Senator Carlson, how do you feel about nuclear energy? And maybe teaming up with me next year to get the moratorium off so we could build another nuclear power plant someplace. And I was just wondering what your feeling is on that. And not only that, if we get too far down the road, everybody likes trains. I mean, someday we could probably get to streetcars, and then we could,
Mr. President,
Senator Dave,
I favor nuclear energy. I'll be right there with you. Most engineers have that kind of attitude about nuclear energy. So thank you, Senator Day and Mr. President.
Okay, Senator Limmer, then we're going to vote. Senator.
Mr. President, so you're saying I have the final word on this debate?
Well, quite often you do.
Then I have a lot of convincing to do. Would the author yield for a question?
No. Yes, he will. Yeah.
I have a question regarding page 2, line 11 on the bill. It claims that North American production of natural gas most likely peaked in 2002. And the whole premise of this entire bill is that somehow the production of oil is peaking all at the same time. And I remember this debate years ago when I was a 16-year-old kid pumping gas in the 1970s. And at that time, you actually hired people to pump gas for the customers that would drive in. We got up to a whopping dollar a gallon at that time, as you might remember, and we were told that oil production was coming to an end in the world, and that the gas prices would go up, and that $1 was just a mere reflection of the market of the increased demand on a scarcer and scarcer product. Well, we sucked in that logic, and now that gas price increased way over a dollar since that time. We've been believing that thought all the time. And now we're asked to believe it again. Now, I don't know if we can make that claim today of whether or not it's peaking or not. We have untapped resources in the United States where Congress refuses for us to drill in Anwar and other areas in the continental United States as well as in Alaska. And certainly our offshore resources that are barred by law for us to tap into. One certainly has to ask the question, with that ready supply available to us, why is the American government restricting the drilling of that product? I don't know. I don't know that question. But certainly, if we continue to restrict the supply, prices will go up. Now, that's generally a restriction placed on oil production by more liberal interests in Washington as members of Congress. How can you assure me that we have peaked in oil production in the world? How can you assure me that we've most likely peaked in 2002, according to your resolution, that we've peaked in natural gas? Or is this another thing that we buy into once again by gullible American consumers, which will most likely increase in tremendous, tremendous increases in the cost of this commodity? Please assure me that we've actually done that. Or is this another one of the inconvenient truth ideas that have perpetuated what I think is Senator Hand's continuance of a myth in this world on this subject?
Mr. President, Senator Hand, I can't assure
Senator
you
Carlson.
That. I can't assure you that we'll have a nice day tomorrow. The problem is that, yes, we have peaked in the U.S. for natural gas. We are now not able to keep up in the U.S. with natural gas production, or with our demand for natural gas. And in fact, we're short, I believe it's something like 10%, and it's getting worse. The natural gas now that we use in Minnesota primarily comes from Canada. And as I mentioned before, natural gas is being used to extract the oil from the ground in Canada, and they are already beginning to cut off supplies or restrict supplies that are coming out of Canada. So now, I guess the major issue here is, let's find out. Let's find out what we need to do. This is a strategic material for us, and what we need to do is find out. So it's most important for us, even though we may disagree on some of the details, but let's find the answer. So I urge members to support the resolution.
Secretary will take, or before that third reading.
House File 995, a bill for an act relating, a resolution memorializing the governor to take action to prepare a plan of response and preparation to meet the challenges of peak oil.
Secretary will take the roll on the resolution. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be at 44 ayes, 13 nays. The resolution is adopted. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, we're going to, there are some committee meetings apparently at 10, Senator Metzen's committee, Senator Rest's committee. There'll be a brief majority caucus in the retiring room upon adjournment. But then those committee meetings will start. It'll be a very brief caucus meeting. And then we will come back at noon to process a few committee reports. Hopefully that will be a relatively short. We'll process Senator Lynch's Senate File 3138, Senator Ellen Anderson's House File 3195. Hopefully that will be fairly brief, and then members would be able to go to lunch. Your lunch hour will be shortened if that 12 o'clock takes a lot longer, but that's kind of the plan. And then we will recess again hopefully for further activity later this afternoon. Senator Wergen. I would yield to Senator Wergen.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Republicans will just have a short caucus in the in 237.
Mr. President, I move a recess to the call of the chair.
On the motion by Senator Pogamiller to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess. Senator Pogamiller. Call of the Senate.
Impose the call of the Senate, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senate's under call.
President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, under motions and resolutions, we have two conference committee reports. And why don't we take up Senator Lynch's Senate File 3138.
Senator Lynch, Senate File 3138.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 3138 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay. Senator Lynch, a description of the bill and what changes that occurred in the conference committee.
Mr. President, this is the newborn screening legislation that we've been working on, and I'm pleased to report that there are a number of stakeholders and interest groups that are supporting the work of the conference committee. First and foremost, this work continues to be supported by the Commissioner of Health and the Department of Health, along with the Minnesota Medical Association, the Minnesota chapter of the American Association of Pediatrics, the Minnesota Hospital Association, the March of Dimes, and the Mayo Clinic. And as you'll recall, we put together a conference committee report. We were then invited to meet with the executive office and discuss some continued concerns. And I'm pleased to report that we were able to accommodate those concerns, and what appears before you today that's different is that when parents are in the hospital with their newborns, they will be given a document, they will be given information, they will be given an opportunity to ask questions about the their options and the test being conducted. And as with many other protocols in the hospital, notation of that via a check mark will be made at the hospital. And so, members, I would encourage your support for this very good public health initiative. And again, it's been a privilege to work with Commissioner Magnin and the agency on this bill.
Further discussion on the conference committee report on Senate File 3138, Senator Vandeveer.
Will Senator Lynch yield for a question?
She will yield, Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Lynch, what does this bill let us do or let happen that isn't happening now?
Senator Lynch.
Mr. President and Senator Vandeveer, this bill is actually stronger than the current existing law. And if, as you'll recall, the impetus for this was that we wanted to give parents further information on the options that were available to them. And this legislation clearly, more so than ever before, delineates what options are available to parents.
Senator Lynch-Hill. Senator Lynch, so the purpose of this bill is to give parents more options than they have now. Is that correct? With regard to screening and
Senator Lynch.
Mr. President, yes, Senator, that is correct. There has been some concern that we have not been as transparent and as forthright in giving parents information on the test to be conducted and what their options were. And Senator, recall that parents have the opportunity to have their infants tested if they so choose. They also have the ability to have their infant tested and opt out of any further research or storage of those blood samples.
Well, I like it that we're giving parents options with their kids. That's really, really big of us to do that. And we're actually going to let them decide if their genetic history is published and studied and bought and sold and everything. We're going to do that for them, though. We're going to let them have a say in that. That's great. Good bill.
Further discussion. Senator Lynch renews her motion that the recommendations of Conference Committee on Senate File 3138 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3138, a bill for an act relating to health, changing provisions for handling genetic information.
Secretary will take the roll. Senate's under call. Having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 51 ayes, 12 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed.
Mr. President.
Parker Miller.
Mr. President, under motions, I would like to revert to messages from the House to pick up a couple of conference committee messages.
Okay. Mrs. The Anderson. Couple other messages at the desk that.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2605 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. And Bill for an act relating to Metropolitan Council, providing for staggered terms of Metropolitan Council members. Senate file 2605 is herewith transmitted or returned to the Senate. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate file or on House File 3195 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 3195, a bill for an act relating to the environment, establishing an intent to participate in a cap and trade program for greenhouse gas emissions. House File 3195 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Signed, Elvin Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 3195 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Senator Anderson, a description of the bill, a little short description of the bill, but mention the changes that were made.
Thank you, Mr. President. This bill relates to the regional cap and trade program that the governor has signed an agreement and with the intent of Minnesota to participate in negotiating. And the bills as passed by the House and Senate were quite similar. We did make a few changes to bring the bills together in conference committee. First of all, we did remove, the Senate did not agree to accept the intent language that was on the House side. We basically took both statements of the House and Senate relating to any cap and trade agreement would have to be enacted into law by the legislature. We agreed with that, but we had phrased it differently, and so we sort of combined them into a new statement on lines 229 to 230 that made that very clear that it could not be just adopted by executive order. We use the Senate framework for the studies that are in this bill. And the Mr. President, I can't hear myself talk.
Somebody said that was good, but not me. Okay, let's... this is pretty major legislation and very important. And take your talks to the back room or out in the hall or somewhere else.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate had negotiated out language on the studies that are in this bill, and we used the framework of the Senate's language and just added some of the details from the House to put together a good explanation of the detailed studies that we want. So really there wasn't a lot of changes that needed to be made to reconcile the two bills. We had good support from all six of our conferees, and I wanted to thank Senator Fredrickson and Kubley for being the Senate members of the conference committee. And to mention that the Department of Commerce has now indicated their support for the bill, which I also appreciate. Members, just very briefly, this is an important bill. It's a very tiny baby step forward on the issue of global warming and a cap and trade, but I think it's an important step. We call it the Green Solutions Act, and the reason for that is that we're suggesting that we need to be very careful and thoughtful in Minnesota about the solutions that we look at for global warming, the solutions we look at for reducing carbon emissions. And this study puts a framework in place for making sure we have all the information we need to understand the costs and the benefits. And as we move forward, this will make sure that we have good, solid information, a foundation for future action. And it also, again, just to remind you, it appoints legislators to observe and give advice to the process of negotiations among the Midwestern states. And again, I think that's very important, that the legislature stay fully engaged in this discussion as we move forward. And members, I'd appreciate your support.
Further discussion on House File 3195, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Anderson, I do appreciate all the work that you have done on this bill. I remember seeing it for the first time, and I think I asked you if you lie awake at night thinking of these things to do, because this was a tremendous, tremendously large bill, and it was very aggressive, and you have scaled it back quite a bit. However, I still see areas of concern that I just cannot vote for this bill, even though the Department of Commerce has signed off on it. And one of them is the advisory group, and we've talked about this quite extensively. My areas of concern in that is just the whole picture of this advisory group going down to these regional meetings with the governor, and the governor actually not inviting them to come. So, number one, you have this advisory group here in the tails or in the background of this governor, and he'd be the only one that'd have an advisory group at these regional governor meetings. I think that would look very stupid. And also, who's going to be paying for these legislators to be going to these meetings, these regional meetings with the governors? I'm a little concerned about the cost on that also. So I guess it's just a little disingenuous, because I don't know if we'd have an advisory group if we had a governor who was a Democrat. And perhaps we're only dealing with this because our governor is a Republican, who I do think has had a very prudent and very steady, fast approach on energy and environmental issues. And I personally don't think he needs some legislators to go down and babysit him.
Mr. President,
Senator Anderson.
Senator Rosen, I'm a little surprised to hear you bringing politics into this discussion. This is not about politics. In fact, you'll see the article I passed out indicates that all of the presidential candidates are on the same page on this issue, the major Republican and the Democratic candidates. And so it shouldn't be something that we talk about as a partisan issue. We should be talking about solutions and moving towards solutions. And it's also an issue of the responsibility of each one of us as elected legislators. The governor has a very critical role in this, and I appreciate that he's taken the lead and signed this agreement with other states. But it doesn't end there. Our responsibility does not end there. And I think, Senator Rosen, all of us were elected by our 70,000 or so constituents to lead and to participate in the most important matters of our day. And I can't think of anything that's a more important matter for public discussion and decision-making in the legislature than how we grapple with the issue of global warming, carbon emissions, and how grappling with that problem will affect our state. And so I think it would be really negligent of us as legislators to just stay home, do nothing, and not lead on this issue. It's our job to participate in those discussions. It's our job to be as well informed as we can about the science and about the impacts on our state's economy, our environmental and natural resources, our public health. And so, you know, I just think this is an issue about the role of the legislature, and that we can't just abdicate our responsibility.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the author yield, please?
She will yield. Senator Rosen.
Senator Anderson, and that is uncharacteristic for me to bring in a partisan issue, but I think this is an issue that has been on the back of a lot of people's minds, if this would be something that would be completely different if we had another type of governor in that seat. And I again say that our governor has been very steadfast with his direction on environmental issues, along with you, Senator Anderson. You've been the strong soldier moving forward. However, I do think it's still a little odd, and I do believe there's quite a few people that think the same way, that we have to have our own separate advisory group at this governor's regional meetings. And Senator Anderson, my question to you is, who is going to pay for these travels to these regional meetings?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, Senator Rosen, I have to just say that I don't agree always with Democratic governors either. It's not about party politics. It's about making sure that we do the job that we're elected to do. So I just really want to be clear about that. I hope that there will be legislators who are interested in participating in this process. I intend to participate in this process, but there's no appropriation in this bill to cover our expenses. I think we're just going to have to figure out if there's a way to do that. I'd love it if the governors would offer to cover that expense, but I'm not expecting that.
Uh, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Anderson yield for a question?
She will yield. Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. President, Senator Anderson, since I've already discussed to this body the numerous economic studies that show that cap and trade is the worst possible scenario for taking care of CO2 issues, assuming that CO2 is the perpetrator of anything, have you found any studies that you could share with us, Senator Anderson, that would suggest that this is good for the economy?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, Senator Jungbauer, I'm sorry I do not have studies to cite to you right at this moment, but I would advise you to go to the International Panel on Climate Change, where we have the vast majority of credible scientists around the world who have formed a very clear consensus that global warming is threatening the future of our planet and that human-created carbon emissions are a major source of that warming. And there's been a lot of economists who have looked specifically at different solutions. As I mentioned, all three of the major presidential candidates have come down on the side of a cap and trade as a solution. Our governor has signed an agreement to negotiate a cap and trade in the Midwestern states. You know, you can disagree that that's the right policy, but I think that the vast majority of people who are concerned about this issue, I think, disagree with you. And again, I want you to read this bill, because this bill doesn't do what I want it to do. This bill doesn't establish a cap and trade program. This doesn't do anything to actually limit carbon emissions in Minnesota. This bill is mostly about studying the facts and the impacts of a cap and trade on our state's economy, on our state's natural resources and environment, on our state's public health. And it's going to look at that and give us those answers so that we can make a reasoned, intelligent decision next year about whether we think we should pass a cap and trade into law. So, Senator Jungbauer, I think those who are skeptics about global warming, those who are skeptics about whether a cap and trade is a good idea, along with those who are proponents of the idea, all agree. I think most of us agree that having this type of detailed information and analysis is what we need to move forward. And so I would say that this really is providing that information that you're looking for.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Anderson, I would argue that I probably know the IPCC reports and the science contained therein better than any, if not most, of the people present in this body, as I've studied them in great detail. And as a matter of fact, the statements you made only occur in the IPCC's summary for elected officials. They do not occur inside the body of evidence. So the summary and conclusions of all four IPCC reports do not reflect the body of evidence inside that report whatsoever. And again, to know these things, I would argue that, members, this is a $500,000, half a million dollar waste of Minnesota taxpayer money. There's numerous studies, including a study by the Manufacturers Association on the exact cost to them in terms of cap and trade as opposed to taxes. And I think this bill is probably mislabeled as a Green Solutions Act, since people that understand CO2 know that it's a natural fertilizer. I guess if we reduce that natural fertilizer, we'd have to change the bill title to the Brown Solutions Act, as plants would turn browner without that fertilizer.
Further discussion on the bill. Anderson renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations of the Conference Committee report on House File 3195 be now adopted, and that the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 3195, a bill for an act relating to environment, establishing the Legislative Greenhouse Gas Advisory Group, etc.
Secretary will take the roll.
3. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes, 22 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill, Senator Moi, House File 3420.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations. Oops.
Apparently, we have to read the message first.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 3420 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 3420, a bill for an act relating to local government, revising procedures and fees charged by county registrars of title for registering supplemental declarations of common interest communities. House File 3420 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Moi.
Now, Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File number 3420 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Senator Moi, description of the bill and what changes were made.
Members, you may recall that House File 3420 was the bill dealing with unifying or creating some uniformity among counties about the registration fee for the filing of documents for condominiums. When we brought the bill up here on the floor, Senator Latz put on an amendment relating to two provisions relating to uniform probate and real estate that the real estate section of the Bar Association asked us to help them with. And then Senator Scheid put an amendment in involving her bill having to do with mortgage foreclosure. And it is with a couple of areas in that bill that we went to conference to try to fix. And I believe Senator Scheid has been able to do that. And, Mr. President, I yield to Senator Scheid to explain very briefly what those agreements were.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. President. The amendments to the mortgage foreclosure piece was the major mortgage foreclosure legislation that we passed much earlier this year that essentially was encouraging borrowers in foreclosure to act quickly and some measures to do that. The amendments were getting the effective dates lined up, a penalty for not notifying tenants when the landlord has gone into foreclosure, and then back to current law regarding the publication of notice. And many of you may have heard from the Newspaper Association, current law requires 6 publications. We had gone to 3, it's back to 6, current law.
Moi.
Mr. President, that's the conference committee report. I want to thank Senator Limmer and Senator Scheid for both working on the report, and I appreciate your support.
Discussion? Seeing none, Senator Moi moves that the foregoing recommendations of the conference committee and report on House File 3420 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give House File 3420 its third reading.
House File 3420, a bill for an act relating to property.
Secretary will take the roll. Final passage. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President, members.
Senator Porter-Miller.
I think we're recessed till 3 o'clock. And at that point, we'll come back and take up Senator Bedsole's statewide health insurance bill. There will be a majority caucus in the retiring room immediately upon recess, and So we'll see everybody at 3 o'clock. Mr. President, I'd move to recess to call the chair.
Mr. President.
Senator Sedgham.
Senator Folkemiller, any idea what we're going to hear this afternoon at this point? I'm talking just a need to caucus, and we have some bills out there that we ought to be talking about.
Mr. President.
Senator.
Senator Sedgham, when we come back at 3 o'clock, we're going to take up Senator Bedsold's statewide health insurance bill, House file.
$18.75, is that correct?
$18.75.
Senator Sedgham.
Senator Folkemiller, reconvene at 3? Is that okay? Will we be going into the evening? I guess perhaps we don't even know that at this point, but it's been suggested there are events going around town. There may be some events around town, dinners and so on. I don't know.
Senator Folkemiller?
Senator Sedgham,
I
don't know about them.
Yeah.
Obviously, we try to accommodate, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand, do you have an announcement or a point of interest?
Mr. President, I'd like to have a point of personal privilege.
Yeah, go ahead.
Senator, thank you, Mr. President, and members. I just wanted to acknowledge that I had distributed a couple of handouts to your desk during the last recess, and I wanted just to make sure that people knew it was from me, and they related to the debate we had prior to our recess about the resolution that Senator Carlson offered, and just wanted to call your attention to that. One of them has to do with refineries. We had some discussion about that.
Mr. President,
Senator Hand, did you have your name on those?
Yes, I did, Mr. President.
Mr. President, that I think members know it's from you. The debate's over. I'd move a recess to the call of the chair, 3 o'clock. To recess till 3 o'clock.
President.
Senator Sedgham.
Senate Republicans, let's do a bill review at 2:30 for those that may want to learn more about statewide health.
Okay.
And room 237.
Folkemiller renews his motion.
Call of the chair, but it will be 3 o'clock.
Call of the chair. Recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.
The Senate will come to orders.
Madam President.
The Senate will come to order. Senator Folkemiller?
Madam President, I'd like to impose a call to the Senate.
The Senate is under call.
I need the number. Mr. President.
Senator Folkemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and a sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
Okay, on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, members, here's the schedule for the rest of the day. We are going to special order House File 1875, which is the health insurance pool, and then we are going to adjourn for the evening.
And don't clap.
It's 3:20.
Don't applaud.
I'm really hopeful that you all have family things that you'd like to be at. It's about 80 degrees out there. So let me just repeat. Once we are done processing this one special order, we're going to adjourn for the evening.
Special.
Would anybody like me to clarify that? Mr. President. Under Rule 26, I would like to designate House File 1875 as a special order and yield to Senator Bedsold, who is going to be brief but thorough.
Senator Bedsold.
Thank you, Mr. President, members. By the way, if you take...
All right. This is a very important bill.
If you take a look under your desk, in a place many of you probably haven't looked before, there's two folders under there. One says unofficial engrossment. There would be in there the Senate language for House File 1875. in that folder. So you may, if you want to see the language and you don't know how to look it up on your computer, this is one quick and easy way to do it. Obviously, any amendments that are offered will be engrossed to this. Mr. President and members, this is a bill that you've seen before in a slightly different shape. This is the statewide health insurance bill for school districts. There was a bill that we passed last year. It was vetoed by the governor. That bill last year would have created a statewide health insurance pool under which the school districts would be mandatory. Those who purchase insurance would be part of the pool. The difference from last year to this year was last year it was going to be set up as a self-insured pool. That is, they would be providing the insurance for themselves, setting up the reserves. The governor's veto message had a number of concerns, but that was one of them, that about the self-insured pool. This is not a self-insured pool. This changes it to a statewide pool under which the pool would purchase insurance from fully insured insurance companies. They still have to provide a number of plans, up to six plans, which could be a cheap plan, an expensive plan, a couple in between. They would it would be governed by a board of directors exactly like we had had it last year in the bill. A change from last year to this year, however, is that as a self-insured pool, they would not be paying the full amount of the MCHA tax. By purchasing insurance from fully insured companies, they would be paying the full share of the MCHA tax. It does still require a $4 million appropriation, which is a loan, and will be paid back over a 10-year period. Frankly, in changing it from a self-insured plan to a pool to purchase insurance, we know there's going to be costs. We don't know exactly what the exact cost is going to be, and the change was just made during the last week from the self-insured to a purchasing pool. So we don't know the exact number, but we know there will be costs. As I say, the actual plan that is chosen by any school district is going to be chosen through the collective bargaining process. So virtually everything that we had last year to this year is still applicable in this bill. As I said, the major change being that it is no longer a self-insured process. It does require, though, that any insurance, any school district must purchase through this if they purchase insurance. And I did have another question that came to me earlier today. Does it apply only to one union as opposed to others? And it applies to any individual, an individual who is insurance eligible under a collective bargaining agreement. So it is not particular to one group or any others. Mr. President, given the fact that this bill has had a lot of attention over the past year or two, so it's actually passed the Senate in 2005, it passed the Senate and the House again last year. So I believe members are familiar with it. And with that one major change in there, I do stand for any questions. I do have one amendment, Mr. President. I do have the A1 amendment to offer to the bill.
Secretary will report the Betzold amendment.
Senator Betzold moves to amend House File Number 1875. The unofficial engrossment as follows: page 4, delete lines 21 to 28, and insert. This is the Betzold A1 amendment.
Senator Betzel on the amendment.
Yes, Mr. President, members, when the bill was heard yesterday in the Senate Finance Committee, we noted that there was some vagueness and actually an internal contradiction within the bill as it was presented to there. So this clears that up. It does provide that the pool, the plans, will not be merged into the state CGIP plan or the PEEP plan. Those are plans that are for that they do provide some statewide health insurance and for small groups, but it was never the intention of this bill that this particular pool would be merged into that. Perhaps in the future that may be a possibility, but I think as far as passing the bill and what we need to do today, we do need to clarify that. It also says that an agreement must not result in this pool becoming self-insured, which was also in the bill before you, or in the pool sharing risk with a plan offered by the commissioner. So it must continue to transfer the risk to the health company, so this would not be putting the school districts or their employees at risk. Mr. President, I stand for any questions on the A1 amendment.
Okay, we have before us the Betzel A1 amendment. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Betzel.
And Mr. President, again, I know that there's some amendments maybe to be offered to the bill. I do stand for any questions or further discussion.
Senator Boniff.
Mr. President, I move for a call of the Senate.
Okay. Senate's under call.
I move that further proceed.
Wait till it gets to 34. Now, Senator Boniff.
I move that further proceedings be dispensed with and the sergeant be directed to bring in the absent members.
Okay, on the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Boniff. I know. Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the A5 amendment.
Secretary will report the Boniff A5 amendment.
Senator Boniff moves to amend House File 1875, the unofficial engrossment, as follows. Page 3, line 12. This is amendment A-5.
Senator Boniff, describe the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. And before I talk about the amendment, I want to express my strong commitment to health care reform. You know, I know that we have several districts across our state that because of the high cost of health care may not even be able to stay in this profession. And so we have a serious problem in our state, and I am committed to doing all that we can to enact major health care reform so that we don't have to be having bills like the one that we're discussing here today. Yet, the bill that we are discussing here today is a bill that mandates all school districts enter into a statewide health insurance pool. And the district that I represent, the teachers in my districts, I represent 5 districts, and 3 of them have strongly asked me to do something to stop this bill from going forward. My school district self-insure. And if this amendment were to, or if this bill were to go forward, it would cost our district a lot of money, and in fact, there would have to be additional cuts that would take place. So this amendment does not allow the school district administration to make the decision. This amendment puts the decision in the hands of the school employees, all school employees, and it says that upon petition by at least 15% of the eligible employees of the employer, that if 15% want to opt out, that there will be a vote, and a vote of eligible employees will be held to determine whether or not to opt out of the health coverage offered by the board. An election to opt out by a majority of eligible employees is effective for a period of 5 years. An opt-out election will not be able to be held more often than every 2 years. So with that, I stand for questions.
Senator Betzel.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I request a roll call vote on the A5 amendment.
There will be 3 hands. Be a roll call.
No. Just
okay, we'll do it.
On general order.
That's all right. Yeah, that's not the biggest mistake we made today. I made one earlier, too.
Yeah. Mr. President, members, I oppose the A5 amendment. One of the reasons why you would have a pool is to be able to share across the board the risks. And we've often said that today's winners are tomorrow's losers and vice versa. If there's a school district that has a lot of young employees, a lot of healthy employees, they may decide, well, we can get a better deal if we get outside the pool and go strike a deal with one of the insurance companies elsewhere. And they probably may get a slightly better deal. But the trouble is, as those very employees start getting older, they're not going to get the deal. And they may say, well, we'd like to go back in the pool now so we can keep our costs down. Well, the pool is not going to work if the people who have lower costs today can get out and then come back in when their costs going up. The reason for the pool is to share them across the board. So allowing them to jump in or out of the pool at their convenience would only mean that only the high-cost districts would bear the brunt of the cost of the pool, and that sort of defeats the whole purpose of having a pool. So, Mr. President, members, I do oppose the A5 amendment.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple things. You know, this bill is different than the bill that we looked at last year. Last year, we allowed the statewide employee pool to be self-insured, and that by changing that in this particular bill, having it be fully insured, some of the ramifications are different. So, for example, if we were in a self-insured pool, then whether you have a very, you know, a pool that is, say, slightly sicker, your costs would go up greatly. Versus when you're in a pool such as this that's fully insured, what that means is, yes, in fact, part of your premiums are determined by the how well or how sick your pool is, but in addition, a greater part of the cost of your premiums depends on the pool at large. So, for example, if Medica is the company that's insuring you, your rates would also be looked at in terms of how all of the people in Medica's pool that are in the fully insured plan, well, how that pool is. So the variations based on the individual features of your pool are much less with this model than with what was in the bill last year. So I think in essence we would actually be hurting the school districts less with those school districts that choose to opt out. And then in addition, in response to Senator Betzold's point about school districts coming in and out, that is why there is a provision in here that if a school district employee group chooses to opt out, that's for a period of 5 years, and they cannot do this election sooner than every 2 years. So, in fact, we are making sure that we are not damaging the viability of either the school district's pool or the overall pool by jumping in and out of this. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am in total support of Senator Bonhoeff's amendment. In spite of the comments made about winners and losers, we are in a time of fiscal challenges for districts of all kinds. And to not have any provision for holding harmless districts that are clearly going to be damaged by this, and they are in all parts of the state. I've heard from people in varying circumstances, many of them very satisfied with the services that they're getting through the educational cooperative service units, who, in spite of the testimony that was, or the refutation that we had in finance committee, have lower administrative costs. And if you look at one of the handouts that you have received, the route that is being taken with the plan this year is going to be even more costly than what many districts have been able to achieve because they're looking after their interests. And I think the closer that we can keep that to those kinds of decisions, the better off we are. And so to deprive people who have been and districts that have been successful in controlling their costs and working to the satisfaction of all of their employees is, I think, just unconscionable. And so I would urge you to support Senator Bonhoeff's amendment.
Further discussion. Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, members, I too stand to urge your support for Senator Bonhoeff's amendment. I represent three school districts. Each of those school districts has communicated to me their strong support for this amendment and their opposition to the underlying bill. And frankly, my teachers in my district are split over this question of whether or not they should be forced into a mandatory pool. In my district, my school districts are cutting. They're cutting their budget. And they have worked over the years very hard to reduce their health care cost increases within their own self-insured pools. But if we pass this bill and don't give them the option to opt out, we're going to be forcing them to pay even more for health insurance than they have been paying so far, which is going to mean more cuts in my school districts to other programs, to the classrooms, to arts, to music, to wherever else. I don't see anything in this bill that's going to compensate those school districts for their increased health insurance costs that would result from the underlying mandatory participation in a statewide health insurance bill. And on top of that, the promise of savings is even less than it was in the previous version. With going to a fully insured pool through an insurance company, the promise of health care savings is lower. So not only would my districts have to pay more, but they're going to get less for it. It seems to me that is not fair either. I don't think we have anything in this body to be ashamed of in terms of what we have done for K-12 education this year. We have supported a K-12 bill, House File 6, that puts $51 per pupil in one-time money back into the K-12 system. We've given the option of an additional $51 per pupil to come out of the capital budgets for the school districts if they wish to do that. We have held harmless the K-12 budget so far in the plans that we've put forward in this Senate. When it's the largest single portion of the state budget, instead of applying the cuts that we've been looking at every other part of the budget, we have not cut K-12 education. And so we have certainly done our job in this legislative session to take care of our schools. On the merits of this particular plan in front of us, I don't think it's fair to make some of our districts have to dig deeper into their budget to cut more in order to support this kind of a plan. I urge you to support the Bonhoeff Amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Betzel yield, please?
He will yield, Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Senator Betzel, could you please explain how this amendment would affect school districts in my Senate district? I represent about a dozen districts. The largest is, the graduating class is just over 200. The largest town in my Senate district is only 11,000 people. So I have a lot of small rural school districts that do have a lot of the same issues as some of the other issues that the senators have just mentioned. Could you explain how this amendment would affect them?
Senator Betzel.
Well, I guess you'd have to ask Senator Bonhoeff to explain the amendment because it's her amendment, not mine.
Thank you.
I have six school districts that I happen to represent. I don't know how yours are configured, but I have some very small ones, and I have actually part of the largest ones in the state, Anoka-Hennepin, which I believe is self-insured. I think that there's been some concern by some school districts that somehow the legislature is going to pick a health care plan and make them pay for it, and this bill does nothing of the sort. It just allows them to collective bargaining choose a health care plan, and that is what the whole purpose of the bill is. But how this amendment affects your school districts, I guess since it's not my amendment, I don't know that I'm in a position to explain that.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Betzel, I just threw you a softball. But I guess I'll ask the question to the author of this amendment. Will Senator Bonhoeff yield, please?
She will yield. Senator Rosen.
Senator Bonhoeff, could you please explain to me how this amendment would affect some of those disparity issues or district size issues with this amendment?
Senator Bonhoeff.
Senator Rosen, I don't think this amendment would affect your school district any different than it would affect a large school district, because your school district with a small number of employees would either be in the pool that Senator Betzold's offering, or they would vote to not be in the pool. And if they I'm presuming by the nature of your question that perhaps your school district is a school district that has felt they would benefit from a statewide pool. Will Senator Rosen yield? Oh, that's true. Okay. So, Senator Rosen, I do not think that this in any way would harm your school district because of the fact that this is now going into a fully insured pool. We have protections in Minnesota, as you know, for small group, for, you know, so that I don't think that those districts who opt out in this are actually going to hurt your school district.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, this amendment is, in the discussion we're having, is getting to the heart of this issue. And the heart is whether these school districts that Senator Bonhoff represents that have a self-funded insurance plan that have done a number of creative and innovative processes within it to save money will be allowed to have their self-funded plan. And why do they want to do that? Because it's cheaper. The fundamental issue on this bill that's in front of us today is the difference between a fully funded plan and a self-funded plan. And business and government and organizations across the state and probably the country have been moving away from fully funded plans to self-funded plans because there's cost savings there. And if we pass the Betzold bill as presented to us today, we will be mandating this fully funded plan upon our school districts, and it's going to cost them money. And so we probably don't want to do that in this time of high gas prices. And so the Bonhoff Amendment is an effort to let some school districts not participate. And I'm not sure that we should force those school districts that have done creative self-funded plans to be required to do the fully funded plan. But I'm not sure we should require any school districts to do it. Thank you.
Letts.
Mr. Chairman, members, also in response to Senator Rosen's question, one of the advantages of getting into a large pool is the bargaining power that a large pool has to negotiate options for health insurance coverage. Certainly, if small districts like yours are able to band together collectively, they will have more bargaining power. Whether that includes every school district in the state through a mandate or 80% of the school districts in the state because some have the option to opt out, I don't think is going to make any difference in terms of the bargaining power. It's certainly going to be more bargaining power than they have alone. And certainly more bargaining power than they might have in the smaller service areas. But for those districts that have found a way to self-insure and to keep their costs down, I think it would be beneficial for us to allow those districts to continue to work that way and to take care of their own insurance costs. And it may be that your own school districts may find that if they evaluate everything carefully, that they've got some way that they can keep their costs down more than the premiums they would have to pay into a large insurance pool. They wouldn't even have the option of going that direction without the Bonhoff Amendment.
Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, just in clarification, Senator Scoy noted that the previously we had talked about a self-insurance, and this is a statewide pool, and I didn't actually mention the rationale for making that change. The Department of Commerce had serious concerns about a self-insurance pool, and therefore, but they said that they would not be in opposition to it, and I believe that their position right now is neutral on the bill as long as they're purchasing it from fully insured companies. I think all the indication is, as Senator Scoy indicated, that yes, if it was self-insured, there would be more savings, but again, because of the objections for the Commerce Department, that is why we're going the direction that we are.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Betzold, you are correct. I do believe the Department of Commerce is neutral on the bill now. The reason that they had concerns about the self-funded pool is because you have to have reserves. $150 million in reserves, they estimated, that would have to be collected from teachers in order to make that a viable insurance plan. Well, this self-funded plan has those same reserves, only now you're going to pay for it every year, ongoing, in increased premiums.
Further discussion on the Bonhoff motion to amend. A roll call has been requested. No further discussion. The secretary will take the roll.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
Bach is coming.
All senators voting that desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 27 ayes and 37 nays, the motion is not adopted. Further amendments? Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A4 amendment.
The secretary will report the A4 amendment.
Senator Saltzman moves to amend House File 1875, the unofficial engrossment, as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert Section 1. This is Amendment A-4.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. First of all, I want to thank Senator Betzel, Mr. Chair, for the work he has done on this issue, because prior to coming to the legislature for 10 years, I represented school districts throughout the state, and every school district is very different. And school districts are struggling with budgets, and they're struggling to recruit and attract teachers, and they're struggling with health care costs. And for the past several years, I know that there has been tremendous effort to address health care for teachers. And for those in this room who want to address this issue, my great concern is that there is great controversy over the present proposal and the fact that it has gone from a wholesale plan to a retail plan. And in the handout you have, the additional costs of this are projected to be $111 million. Now, just recently, we voted on a bill to send $51 to schools for the year, and that didn't seem to be enough. And yet we are considering a plan that would raise costs to perhaps as much as $111 million. I told this story last year, but I represent four school districts, and two of them are adamantly against this plan. So I stand with over 1,000 teachers behind me today. This is not about being against teachers. But when we invited representatives of the union to come to our school district and to sit with teachers and school administrators to find out what's the problem here, why can't we support this, at the end of that meeting, somebody said to the representative from the union, if our teacher group came to you and said, well, we've got this health care plan that we're considering, what do you think? And they were asked, well, how much is it going to cost? What is the coverage going to be? What's the plan going to look like? And the answer was, we don't know. You tell us, don't take it. And then a teacher stood up and said, but you're asking our state senator to vote on something that we don't have the answers to. So that's why I have the A4 amendment. This amendment was put on a bill that I was carrying to add school districts' employees to CGIP. The amendment was added, and that we need to study that. Now, I know we're going to hear that there's been lots of studies about this, but there's also been a lot of questions asked, is why don't we look at adding school districts employed to the existing statewide employee group insurance plan? And that's what this amendment does. It gives us an opportunity to really find out some answers of adding school district employees, either combined with other persons currently covered by CGRIP or as a separately rated group for premium purposes. And if this study is completed, we can come back next session and have a serious discussion of looking at an existing plan. I want to note that I have worked with the Department of Finance and DOER. They are willing to do this study. There's no fiscal note to them doing this study. This amendment has been supported by a number of the major education groups who are looking for, let's try to find a real solution, but let's put some real numbers on the table. And again, I want to thank Senator Betzold. You have done carried this. You are trying to address a problem, but I hope that you will consider this as a reasonable alternative.
Senator Batzold.
Mr. President, members, we do a lot of studies around here, and this particular issue has been studied a lot over the years. In fact, before I became the chief author of the bill, when Senator Stumpf was carrying this bill, he was involved in lots of studies. And in fact, he tells me that he was involved in studies when he was in the House of Representatives. So that goes back a long time. Mr. President, members, this is a delete-all amendment. This strikes the whole bill, and not just adds a study, it deletes the whole bill and changes it into a study. And frankly, I think I already know the answers to part of this because the House of Representatives had a hearing on this a few years ago to look at some of these issues. The PEEP program, the Public Employees Insurance Program, that is for small groups of government and maybe a handful of people, maybe three or four people who can't get insurance anywhere else. You can't take 200,000 people and put them into the PEEP program with it's operated by the Department of Administration by two or three people. The CGIP program is the state employee group insurance plan. I just don't think we should be going there and looking at that right now. Maybe in the long run it might make sense to look at some of that, but my bill specifically prohibits that at the moment, and for good reason. We don't want to mess with something that is out there right now. Let's set this on up and make it work. But studying it anymore I don't think is going to accomplish anything. So I oppose the amendment, and I ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Are there three hands for a roll call? Oh. Roll call has been requested. Further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A4 amendment. All senators voting that desire to vote. All senators voting the desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 29 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further amendments on House File 1875. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 1875. Senator Gerlach, did you have an amendment? Seeing no further amendments, the Secretary will give House File 1875 its third reading.
House File 1875, a bill for an act relating to health, modifying Board of Directors for Comprehensive Health Association, etc.
Further discussion on House File 1875. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you. Would Senator Betzold yield for a few questions?
Senator Betzold will yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Senator Betzold, I don't have an amendment here, but I do want to zero in on the appropriations section. You discussed this when you explained the bill, and I'm looking at it here. There's a $4 million appropriation, members. $4 million is being appropriated from the budget reserve given to this entity. And my first question is, Senator Betzold, what type of entity is this exactly? This isn't a state agency. It says here in the bill, the Minnesota School Employee Insurance Pool, all capital letters, period. Is that a public corporation? It's not a state agency. Can you tell me who we're giving this interest-free loan to? I should specify that. It is a loan. I understand that. But can you tell me what type of entity is this? What's the legal status of this that we're giving a taxpayer interest-free loan to?
Mr. President and Senator Gerlach, this entity is going to be controlled by a board of directors, which is defined in the bill and described under Section 2. As I indicated in my remarks, the original purpose of the loan in the previous version of the bill was as a startup cost when this was supposed to be self-insured. The cost may not be the same now because of the change, but since this was only done within the past week, we don't have an exact fix on what this is. Now, when the bill was discussed yesterday in the Finance Committee, and I recognize that you were not on the Finance Committee, Senator Cohen indicated the money was to be appropriated from some cancellations back to the general fund. So this is money that I believe had been already appropriated for other purposes and now is being reused for this purpose. But it is money, as the bill indicates, is to be a loan and is to be repaid back to the general fund over a 10-year period.
Senator Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman, also this... I didn't quite get the question answered, though. I realize that this board is described in the bill, but it's not a government agency. So, members, what we're doing is we're giving $4 million interest-free loan to this entity. Of course, we're in a budget deficit. We're going to have to either raise taxes or we're going to have to make cuts in other areas of the budget to grant this $4 million loan. Senator Betzold, the $4 million was the same amount when this was a self-insured plan, and now I understand it's changed to a fully insured plan. My guess is that the startup costs would be significantly less since these plans would be bought on the market and not have to be, wouldn't be self-insured. So the $4 million has stayed the same. So number one, why is that loan the same amount? Where did the $4 million number come from? And is there an itemized list of what these startup costs are? I would assume that the proponents of this proposal have brought to you and said, well, these startup costs, rather than just being kind of nebulous, I'm sure they've described, well, we're going to have to hire, a number of people. This is what the intended salaries would be to help with the startup, that there are certain costs, not just pull the number out of the air, but what is the itemized cost of that's going to add up to $4 million?
Mr. President, Senator Gerlach, first of all, let me clarify that this is created as a public corporation. It's just not some private entity that is going to be given this. This is on page 2, line 16, that is, this pool is created as a public corporation, is governed and subject to provisions of Chapter 317A. So that, which is similar to other public corporations that we have. I don't believe that there is an itemized list right now, as you're requesting, but there are going to be costs assumed in creating, analyzing the insurance rates that are out there, making comparisons and so forth. again, this was all changed within the past week or so to meet the objections of the Commerce Department to, instead of having a self-insured, to have a pool to purchase insurance from insurance companies. So they are still in the process of trying to come up with exactly how it is, but they do know that you can't do this for cheap, for free. You're going to have these costs incurred in order to create this. Now, obviously, any monies that are not expended are going to come back to the general fund, but they do have to have a report that is going to be due to the legislature to tell us just what they're spending and how they're doing it on. So, as I say, I wish I could be more specific, Senator Gerlach, than that, but I just know that there's going to be costs in getting this thing going in order to completely review the insurance options that are out there and to begin the negotiations with the various fully insured insurance companies.
Senator Gerlach.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I don't have another question for Senator Betzel. I'd just like to point out that what we have here is we have a $4 million interest-free loan over 10 years. So we know that there's a future value to money, and if it's interest-free, that means that the actual cost for that will be borne by the taxpayers. Essentially, the taxpayers are paying the interest on this loan, because $4 million 10 years from now will not be worth what $4 million is today. The taxpayers, the general fund taxpayers of the state of Minnesota, will be paying the interest on this interest-free loan. We also know that $4 million is essentially a number that is just a shot in the dark. We don't know what that is. I don't understand why this bill has been hashed out over several years. It's gone through many changes, permutations, challenges, amendments, and yet we don't have an itemized list of what we think the expenses are actually going to be for startup, that we've just taken a number, $4 million, out of the air. And even though the bill has changed radically, those startup costs haven't changed. That doesn't make any sense. It seems like it's just a number pulled out of the air, and the taxpayers are going to be bearing the expense for this interest-free loan. Thank you, members.
Further discussion, Senator Day.
Mr. President, first off, to Senator Bonoff, thank you for offering your amendment, because I think there are schools that would like to opt out. Senator Saltzman, thank you. I thought your amendment made some sense, that we actually would take a little time to look this over. I guess the question I have, and to Senator Betzel, I take it that this isn't for the kids. You know, we've always heard around here, this is for the kids, this is for the parents. This surely isn't. So we don't have and I voted for the education bill. And if the numbers that you're telling me are right, in my district, I got schools, and I was on the Senate floor when we passed the bill and told everybody that 2% and 1% wasn't enough, that our schools were going to go broke. And I will tell you, in my district, I got one heck of a lot of schools that are in all sorts of problems. This does not help them at all. If we have millions of dollars to give anybody, we got to get it back to the school districts so they can get it into the classrooms to either have more programs, have more teachers, have more. But one of the last things that parents and students need is a cost that isn't going to help them at all. And somebody, I think, would have to make the case, which nobody, and maybe you could make the case for me, how bad off is somebody where we're, whoever we're helping here with this program, please explain to me either the work schedule or the insurance that people already have or the salary structure that makes it that this is a section of our school district. I know how many people are hurting in the school district, and this is probably the last group in the school district that's hurting. So I think it's about time we start thinking about the kids, and we start thinking about the parents that are having a hard time getting their kids to the school and having a hard time paying their property taxes and a whole host of things, instead of saying, hey, you know what we just did? We just dumped more on you.
And that doesn't, I can't see where that's going to sit well. It surely isn't going to sit well in my district. And I guess I would like to, maybe somebody should spend a little longer time studying this, and that's why I like Senator Saltzman's idea. Thank you.
Senator Betzel.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Day. School boards obviously have to work within the confines of their own budgets, and the fact is when a larger share of their budget goes to pay health insurance premiums, that's less money that they have to provide for the schools and for the kids. So this anything we can do to help bring down the cost of health care premiums will help free up some more money for its intended purpose. The fact of the matter is that there's a couple of six school districts right now that simply do not provide any health care insurance at all. They can't afford it anymore. There's a number of employees through the state that they're basically the whole paycheck is eaten up by their health care costs. They can't even afford to work. So this is going to help us try to ease some of the pressures on the other part of the budget to help the kids.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members. I probably should have handed this out, and if you'll bear with me, I've got the statewide health insurance pool study here. We did it, and the report came out January 23rd of 2004. And in this, of course, you probably all read that, I'm sure, but in this, there is a part of it that deals with insured versus self-funded pools. And it does admit that a fully insured pool has less risk. In fact, the carrier takes all of the risk. And the cost of this risk transfers results in higher contributions to the reserves over the life of the pool. So that's what we're doing. We're going to this fully funded pool, and you have a higher contribution to the reserves. In addition, the insurance premiums that the pool pays would have to include the premium tax and the MCHA assessment, an additional cost that the participants in this fully funded pool would have to pay. And finally, the pool would not have the flexibility to unbundle and shop for its stop loss coverage, resulting in additional higher costs as opposed to the current self-funded pool. And this study then results that this does not justify the added cost of the insured arrangement. So this study that we completed in 2004 is pretty clear that moving to a fully funded pool plan is not a benefit to Minnesota schools and the staff, and really to the kids. You know, we've got in the paper stories about school districts that are cutting their extracurricular activities. The fees are going up. Cost of fuel is, you know, over $4 for diesel fuel now. I just don't think this is the time to pass these additional costs on to our schools, and I would urge you to vote no.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Betzel. We have had this bill before in slightly different form. I'm a little bit concerned that this did not get a hearing in a policy committee, and some of the things that are new to this bill I think would bear some scrutiny that I don't know that they're going to get here on the floor, and we certainly haven't had, I don't think, in a policy committee testimony on these things. It also is a concern to me that we've never had this bill in the education policy committee, which I think it needs to be. But I did want to address one of the points that you made and that have been made in the past, that this is a bill that is going to help reduce health insurance costs, and the fact is it won't. It won't. What we know right now is that there are some districts that are doing pretty well at managing their costs, the districts I represent being among those. They tell me that this kind of a plan, once implemented, will immediately result in an increased cost to those school districts that will have to be absorbed with not any change in coverage to their insurance policy. Now, there will be some districts, perhaps, that will see improvement. They'll have their costs mitigated by this averaging of cost. But the point is, the underlying drivers that create those costs will not be changed by this. This is a structure to shift how the costs are accounted for. It has nothing to do with the underlying drivers of the cost. And I would just say that if you want to control health care costs, what you have to do is have some kind of structure in place that is a way to encourage the behavior of people to change. The behavior, whether it's wellness or whether it's how often they see the doctor or what kind of choices they make when they take advantage of the health care system. And to make those things effective, you've got to be able to make those changes and then see a difference in your rate, your experience rating. And that's one of the things that goes on in school districts today. I've talked to school districts I represent, and being on the board of Eden Prairie for a while, I know this is what happens. They do things, they create programs, they work with their employees, they get their employees to change their behaviors, maybe they get them to stop smoking, eat better, do more exercise, they have a lower use rating, and guess what? Their insurance rates go down. Now, one of the things that's going to happen with this kind of structure is that all that effort will mean nothing in terms of their rates, because their efforts will have to be pooled against the efforts of every other district in the state. And it won't result in any lower cost. They can do a wonderful job with their employees in the Eden Prairie District or the Minnetonka District and get them to all be healthier and use the medical treatment facilities in a wiser way, and it will do nothing to affect their insurance rate because they're going to be pooled with everybody in the state. And members, I think this is one of the fatal flaws of this bill. This does nothing to create the right incentives that are going to result in lower health care costs. All it does is take the existing costs and pool them in a way so that the people that have higher costs today will get a lower cost, at least temporarily. And the districts that are doing well and having lower costs, they will see an immediate increase. But over time, everybody will go up because the dynamic that creates lower costs will be destroyed. The incentives to behave differently by employees will be destroyed. The incentives that managers and administrators will have to work with employees, they'll stop doing it because there will be no reason to do them. And so, members, if you're interested in lowering health care costs, as we all are, this is not the mechanism to accomplish that. This is a very short-term fix, if you want to call it that, that will do only one thing: shift the current costs around the state, make some winners, some losers, but 3-4 years down the road, everybody's costs will be higher, and none of the drivers of those health care costs will change. So this is not good health care policy, and members, we ought to reject it.
Senator Day. Further discussion on House File 1875. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this has been a tough 48 hours for suburban school districts. Just 2 days ago, we took a shot at QComp, the alternative compensation plan, which many of these same districts, which are trying to hold on to the local control and do their own health insurance, will be impacted by this bill. So a tough couple days for suburban districts, and not just those that are considered healthy and wealthy, but including districts like Hopkins, that Senator Latz talked about, Bloomington. So I'd encourage a red vote, members. We talk constantly, year-round, about the need and the value of local control. There is nothing local control about this bill. We are going to punish the districts. We're going to punish those schools that are doing health insurance in new ways, in innovative ways, in ways that make sense, in ways that they are comfortable with. We're going to punish them. And so, you know, Senator Betzold, I respect the amount of work you have put in on this. You are dogged and persistent, and in the face of years of opposition, this bill continues to show some life. But it is my hope and my plea that we'll see some more red votes this year, and that we again may be looking to the governor for some help on this bill.
Seeing no further discussion on House File 1875, the secretary will take the roll.
Thank you.
All senators voting that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes and 25 nays, the bill is passed. Its title is agreed to. Senator Pogamiller, messages from the House. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate files. Herewith returned Senate file numbers 960 and 3377, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 3138 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 3138, a bill for an act relating to health, changing provisions for handling genetic information. Senate File 3138 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
We're going to recess, but we only need a skeleton crew. There's going to be a Rules Committee meeting at 5 o'clock, and we're going to process one bill, and then I want to take that committee report tonight, so we just need a skeleton crew. So members do not have to come back, and we'll come back at 11 a.m. tomorrow. So I'd stand for messages or announcements. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President and members of the Pension Commission, the Pension Conference Committee will be meeting immediately after session in Room 5 of the State Office Building. That's the Pension Conference Committee, Room 5 of the State Office Building.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, if I could see the Senate members of the Health Reform Conference Committee or the former Conference Committee in my office after we adjourn.
Conference committee members from the Transportation Conference Committee need to check with the chair's office. There is a conference committee report that will be signed sometime this evening. Further announcements? Without any objections, the following members will be excused. Senator Vandeveer from 9 to 9:35, Senator Ortman 9 to 10, Senators Prettner, Solon, Sharon, Sinjum, Berglund from 9 to 10, Larson 9 to 12:40. Coring, 12:30, 12:40, Fredrickson, 9 to 4:05 p.m., Senator Latz, 9 a.m. to noon, Senator Wergen, 12:40 to 1, Senator Berglund, 3 to 4:30, Senator Rest, 3 to 4 p.m., Senator Murphy, various times throughout the day, Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, members, So recess to the call of the chair, just a skeleton crew, though, so members don't need to stay. There's a rule committee meeting at 5, room 123, just to process one bill. 125, I'm sorry. Senator Olson, the regular room, Senator Olson, I think it's 125. And we'll come back at... We'll come back at noon tomorrow, members, noon. So a recess to the call of the chair, skeleton crew, back at noon tomorrow.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, the Finance Committee will meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock for hopefully not a long period of time.
Meet later then.
Oh, 10 o'clock? 10 o'clock. Mr. President, 10 o'clock.
Senator Roblin
said 10 o'clock.
On the motion for recess, all in favor, aye. Opposed, Senate's in recess.
Madam President.
Senate will come to order.
Madam President, are there reports of committees?
There are, Senator Pogamiller. Secretary will read the reports.
Senator Pogamiller from the Committee on Rules and Administration, to which was referred under Joint Rule 2.03, together with the committee report thereon, Senate File 3349, a bill for an act relating to education, creating a responsible family life and sexuality education program, reports the same back with recommendation that the report from the Committee on Education, shown in the Journal for May 7, 2008, be adopted. That committee recommendation being the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass. And Senator Pogamiller from the Committee on Rules and Administration, pursuant to Senate Rule 5.2, upon the request of Senator Metzen, the chief author of Senate File 2668, a bill for an act relating to public safety, controlled substances, recommends that Senate File 2668 be withdrawn from the Committee on Judiciary, given its second reading and placed on general orders.
Senator Pogamiller.
Madam President, I move that the committee report just read by the Secretary be now adopted.
All in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate file numbers 3349 and 2668.
Second reading. Announcements? Any announcements?
Madam President, I believe there's one more motion at the desk.
Senator Metzen moves that his name be stricken as chief author and the name of Senator Murphy be added as chief author to Senate File 2668.
On the motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Madam President, are there any announcements or excuses? Okay, then, Madam President, I would move that the Senate adjourn till Friday, May 16th, 12 noon.
All in favor of the Pogamiller motion, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Senate is adjourned.